Today is Thursday, May 25th, 2006. Thank you for tuning in to SecurityInfoWatch.com's podcast series. I'm your host, Jeff Cole, editor of SecurityInfoWatch.com. And we'll be putting on this weekly podcast series to give our listeners an audio taste of the security world, provide you with a quick update on the week's news, and to provide you access to audio interviews with some of the leading thinkers in the security industry, be that the risk management portion of our industry, whether that's the alarm section industry with monitoring, or simply corporate security issues that end users are facing. Top news of the week: Northrop Grumman announced today that it put together a team to put in a place a bid for the Secure Border Initiative. Now, this is a Department of Homeland Security project that would place a very secure border, especially focused on the Mexican border in the southwestern United States. Northrop Grumman partnered with a few other companies that I'm sure you're well aware of, including Bearing Point, Identix, L3 Communications, L. Robert Kimball and Associates. So what we're seeing is there's Oracle, there's Nortel, Nextel, Sprint's also in there. What we're seeing is really the first of the heavy hitters coming in on board this project, putting in their proposal after the RFP went out about a month ago. Also, big news this week: HID, name of course you know from the smart card industry, has made an agreement to purchase Fargo Electronics. Fargo is a manufacturer of secure card printing solutions. They also do the secure card printing themselves. Other top news: Security Dealer, our sister publication in the magazine format, was down in Savannah, Georgia, beautiful Savannah, Georgia, last week, and filed a quick report from the CSAA Electronic Security Forum and Expo. That crew was Peter Harlick, Susan Whitehurst, and Susan Brady, and we thank them for their report, and you can find that and a lot of other great news stories on our site this week. Let's start this week's interview without further ado. Joining us today is Bill Comtois. Bill is the Managing Director of Vericom, Inc., and he's an authority on disaster preparedness and business continuity planning. Bill has authored a number of articles for SecurityInfoWatch.com starting about a year ago. Very popular articles on disaster exercise management, and please do check those out. You can find those and other columns by Bill on our executives page. Under the columns, you may have to go back into the archive columns to find some of his older works. Also with us today is Tom Abruzzo. Tom is the president of TAMP Systems and a consultant for disaster recovery and business continuity. Earlier this week, he and Bill co-authored a piece called Business Continuity Planning 101. It was a primer guide to business continuity planning, as the name might suggest. And in June, later in June, we will see them come out with Business Continuity Planning 102 as a follow-up, more in-depth piece on that. So we welcome Bill and Tom today to SecurityInfoWatch.com's Security Radio podcast series.
We're here with Bill Comtois and Tom Abruzzo, two leading thinkers in the business continuity and emergency exercise management industry. This week, one of the things we've been seeing on Security InfoWatch is great interest in disaster planning exercises, with some articles that Bill wrote last year being some most read. And wanted to touch base with you guys: why are we seeing so much interest in disaster exercise management issues?
Well, Jeff, this is Bill. I think there are a number of factors driving this. Certainly, the looming threat of bird flu and another harsh hurricane season are on just about everybody's minds. But other factors driving this: there's been a sort of a wave of funding that came down the pike from federal sources last year that is translating into actual running of exercises this year for certain public sector organizations, towns and counties and whatnot. And then I guess a third factor that we're seeing is companies that have moved well along in their business continuity planning, disaster recovery planning processes are seeing exercises as the next logical step.
And if I could echo that third point, exactly. The industry is getting a little more mature these days, and so most of the practitioners that already have a plan are saying, in order for me to get the word out to the people that need to participate at the time of an incident, we need to test, we need to exercise the plan, and from that we'll get lessons learned and we'll be able to improve the plan. So that I see as the primary reason why it's popular today, more popular today.
It seems a lot of these companies have an awareness of this already. Obviously, there are a lot of companies, whether it's iReaders or other companies out there, that are not already doing these disaster exercise programs. If they're not, why would now be a good time to start? I mean, what are we looking at there? What are the benefits? What are the concerns that would make 2006 as good of a time as any?
Well, Jeff, I think any sound continuity planning, disaster recovery planning program should have tightly integrated with it an exercise program of sorts. The challenge or the trick is to run exercises or begin an exercise program at the right time. Starting too soon can be a little awkward. One certainly wants to have a good foundation with a fairly solid set of plans first. And I think once that's in place, the door is open for reaping a great deal of benefit in terms of understanding the organization's ability to actually execute the plans by running exercises.
Very true. And if I could add to that, what we when we do a roll out a planning project for a company, many companies ask, well, are we going to exercise the plan at the end? And the answer is absolutely yes. However, the very first exercise needs to be an awareness test. People just need to know, how do I navigate through this reference document that we created, and what are my roles and responsibilities? And essentially, they need to know just a half a dozen things, and they need to know those half a dozen things cold. And so, then from there, that's the foundation for doing the more advanced either simulation type of exercises. All right, we have this situation. What do we do? And that kind of thing. So, we really need to start with a foundation of awareness.
Tom, to kind of continue on that point, if companies move a little bit too fast, what are some of the common mistakes that they could expect to experience when putting together a disaster exercise program?
Well, Jeff, exactly what happens is that they'll jump into a more advanced exercise, and people don't even know where to begin because they don't have the foundation information of where is that information that I need to carry out the exercise. Where is that reference book? Where how do I find it in that book? Most of the exercises need to be, I'm a big proponent of saying that they need to be an open book test. Nobody's expected to memorize the plan that we put together or anybody puts together. And so using that as your reference guide for the exercise is an extremely important part of it. They run the risk of failing before they get out of the gate.
Bill, your thoughts? Common mistakes?
Well, certainly on the back end of the process, we see all too often an exercise is planned and run very well, and then the lessons learned or the opportunities to learn from the exercise are often shortchanged. It's certainly a challenge to identify all the exercises, but even more of a challenge for some organizations to bring those opportunities for improvement, lessons learned, whatnot, back into their standard operating procedures and weave them back into their existing plans to make those plans even better and more resilient.
For the benefit of some of our listeners who have not done disaster exercise programs in the past, I think there's a misconception, perhaps, that this is guys in the space suits, biohazard suits, running around your offices. What are some of the different forms that companies or that a disaster exercise program can take?
Well, certainly one of the easiest to start off are discussion-based exercises, most commonly known tabletop exercises, where a group of participants, more often than not decision makers and leaders within the organization, will gather in a conference room and be presented with a particular hypothetical scenario. And that scenario forms the basis for roundtable discussion. And through that discussion, issues come up, questions arise that hadn't been anticipated previously, and that often leads to a very good list of action items for improving on the plan and so on. More advanced forms, more engaging forms of exercises can be had involving actual physical activities as opposed to just discussion, functional exercises, and even full-scale exercises where entire teams and resources are mobilized and deployed in response to a hypothetical scenario.
You know, I don't think I could add anything to that. That's exactly right, Bill. You know, we look at this as either a logical test or a physical test, and the logical test is more of a, we sit around a room and hypothesize about what we would do, and the physical test is we need to move resources around to go out there and actually try to simulate a rail disaster. We go to either our recovery site and try to do what we would normally do in our everyday work day there.
And obviously these things are we talk about why these are top of mind. The news this morning that down in Louisiana, they're tracking the path of fictitious Hurricane Alicia as a part of a two-day drill into evacuating the state, headed up by Governor Kathleen Blanco. In terms of going to take that back to the corporate world, you gentlemen just this week published an article on our site discussing how to begin your business continuity planning and how to create that plan. How do the disaster exercises fit into BCP programs?
Well, Tom mentioned a number of ways that the two weave in together, but I think the exercise program, simply put, is a way of measuring how well an organization will actually execute or perform what's called out in the plan, whereas the plans, business continuity plan, disaster recovery plans, and so on, tell you how, but not how well one will perform.
And what we see all too often is people don't understand that this is there needs to be not only the exercise itself, but before you exercise, you want to train your people. You don't want them to fail. You want to give them the information. It's not like when you went to school and they gave you that surprise test. There might be a time where we'll do surprise exercises, but in a planned exercise, the very first thing needs to be train them on what it is that they should be doing, and this way they're more apt to succeed and they're more apt to come up with those lessons learned about how to improve the process to improve the plan itself. And then that feeds then the next thing that needs to be done, and that's a good maintenance program where lessons learned from the exercise needs to go back into the process, the living process, and keep the plan up, improve the plan itself.
Guys, before we wrap up today's chat, Tom, obviously you're out there at the CPM trade show. Bill, you're immersed in the stuff day to day. What are you guys seeing as leading technologies that are either out there now or are moving down the pipe that can aid in this business continuity planning or the disaster exercise program process? Let's start with you, Tom, since you're out at the CPM show.
So what we see, is back to basics. You need to have a test plan. That plan, generally speaking, is simply a Word document, but it needs to be complemented by the full plan itself, the actual business continuity plan that you had originally prepared. When you do this exercise, you need to be prepared to document events, so you have an event log as well as a problem log to identify the things that happened that were problems during the exercise. And then once you get all that, you need to, as I said earlier, you need to funnel it back into improving your plan. I mean, the whole key of doing this exercise is to improve the plan and make people more aware of what they would do in a real-life situation. All too often, the real-life situation comes up and everybody is in shock and they really can't deal with that. So the exercise is sort of, I've done this before, and they could deal with it in a real life situation.
Bill, thoughts on technology?
Excuse me, I couldn't agree more with Tom. Getting the basics done, getting them right is very important. But looking just down the road a bit to some of the technologies that might come to play and help improve this process, there are a couple that come to mind. One is simulation technologies. Computer-based, web-based simulations can be used very effectively to run exercises more efficiently, more cost-effectively, and record results, get results, issues identified, opportunities for improvement, and very efficiently weave those back into a continuity planning improvement process and have this continuing cycle, if you will, of plan and test and improve. Plan, test, and improve, and having technology tightly integrated through that cycle can make that whole process far more efficient and more streamlined.
Well, gentlemen, thanks for joining us on SecurityInfoWatch.com's podcast series for this week, discussing business continuity planning and disaster exercise management, and I hope to touch base with you guys soon.
Thanks so much.
And thank you, Jeff. Thanks for the opportunity.